SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races after extensive coverage with Mark Cassie on his big barn. Andy's going to join us, and I'll make I got a couple of notes. You know, it's not something I'm going to bring up with Andy per se, but to be honest, as a Naira Betts user too, I had trouble, and a lot of people off and on though. It wasn't widespread. It was isolated, a strange outage that affected the ability to, you couldn't, first thing I noticed was the balance. And then some bets were going in, but not, you couldn't really tell. So I got a comment from Pat McKenna, actually sent me a note earlier. This was not a system-wide outage, and many customers experienced no issues at all. To those that were affected, they apologize, strive to provide the best service in the big days and address the source of that issue. And there was a couple of services that had hiccups. So I wanted to slip that in before we had a chance to visit with Andy. And here is Andy. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. Good. Just had. Whenever you have Mark Cassie, you better sign on for the long haul. There's so many horses that he had like 14 horses run over the weekend.
You might have the most horses in the country, right?
Hey, boy, it feels like it.
Yeah, seems like it. Well, he has so many beachheads. Horses are running well in New York this year. Distant trainer here does a good job. A good winter here.
Oh, and he talked to us about pointing Salty for the Phipps.
Sure, why not? Yeah, kind of nice to see her get that win.
Yes.
The horse had been really unlucky in a lot of races. You know, stumble at the start. Was it the coaching club she stumbled at the start?
I think that's right.
Yeah, she felt like the horse that really kind of deserving of getting a big win. You know, I remember I was actually at Gulfstream when she made her debut. She fought privately after that race. That race was won by a Rapoli Pletcher Furster. She ran second for Ian Wilkes. Right? She was Ian the first race she ran, right?
That, yes. Going back.
Yeah,
and
she's a nice horse.
She danced all the big dances. I mean,
yeah, yeah. Well, I agree. Yeah, she ran very well in a lot of those races. I agree. Though I Troy Ann turned out to be a bit of a mess with Abel Tasman obviously not showing up, but still, she ran well. Got a nice trip, nice ride. Who rode her? Giroux rider?
Gaffleon.
Oh, Gaffleon did. I'm sorry.
He's stuck with her.
He rode. It's funny because he came to New York and he rode here on Saturday. At least a winner or two, I think, on Saturday. I can't remember. You should pay more attention. I like Tyler. Yeah, he's a nice kid.
And he's on the move.
Yeah, no, he's doing great. Matt Musgrave has his book.
Yes.
Good team. Yeah. Yeah, he's a chance he might come to Saratoga.
No, he's...
Yeah, I hope he comes up there this summer. It'll be hard, you know. Even with Matt, it'll be hard. He'll get business, but it's tough. But it's good for him, you know. Better way to progress than to ride at Gulfstream and, you know, win a bunch of races. And, you know, you could always win a bunch of races. Get a chance to see where he stands. I'm not sure he's going, but he could. If he does, that would be, that'd be great.
I alerted Andy, everybody, to the really fun across the board podcast that you taped with David Aragona, which
the post Derby podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, that was fun. Dave was great. Yeah, I thought, you know, it's funny. Actually, I'll give credit to Najin Thompson, the worst of me. It's actually his idea. So we were talking about doing a pre-Derby one, which I did do. Pat had kind of come up with that and said, you know, I know you did a video. Why don't you do a podcast, too, which is fine. I was happy to do it. And then Najin said, why not do a post? Good idea. So did that. And it was fun. You know, David and I both watched the race numerous times and went through every horse, basically. It's not that long if you want to listen across the board. I think it's about 20 minutes or so.
Yeah. And I'll send out the link. Well worth watching. It's strips and traps for Derby.
You don't have to watch. You don't have to watch. You can listen. You can watch TV while it's on with the sound off. Yeah. I mean, the problem with the Derby is that this year's Derby, it seems, and all sloppy tracks aren't the same, but it's happened a lot. It reminded me sort of that Smarty Jones Derby where a lot of horses just completely failed to show up. Excuse me. I don't have any argument that the best two horses, and maybe even the third best horse, but definitely the best two horses ran 1-2. But when you get it, the field is scattering the way it did, and it's clearly horses just didn't hail the track. You know, what that means going forward, I don't know. I don't know how good, if they were good enough. Or, you know, it's just, you can't really judge a performance when a horse runs as badly as it did relative to its, you know, general form. And in this case, I think it was much more to do with the track than trips, because I don't think there were there weren't that many trips in this race, considering. And for a Derby, it was really relatively devoid of trips. I mean, we're about to say that everybody had a perfect trip, but to me, the winner was the one who probably had the toughest trip. I think it's clear the winner's one of the toughest trip. I don't, setting a blazing pace like that. I mean, if you look at the race, you know, you compare it to Orb's year, which was, that was a sloppy track too, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's always sloppy, the Derby. You just assume it's going to be sloppy, I guess. If you had horses in this year's Derby that handled the track and ran as well as some did in that race, Justify very well would have gotten beaten. His one of three final figures probably is very accurate and is not a particularly astounding figure for him. And he's a horse that, I mean, we'll see over time, is likely to be capable of running much better figures. That figure is very much reflective of pace. And had there been superior horses that had handled the going, he very well may have gotten swallowed up and run third or fourth, fifth or whatever, and we would have been saying, you know, the horse you want out of this race, Justify. And if you look back to Orb's Derby, who were the horses that came back and did well? Well, Oxbow was the only horse that was engaged in the pace at all that ran the Preakness. He won. And, of course, the pace setter in the race, Palace Malice, came back in the Belmont, and he won over Oxbow. And Orb, you know, struggled in Preakness and was a distant third in the Belmont. And that was the perfect Derby to explain to people. We talked about it at the time, the concept of pace meltdowns. So there was somewhat of a pace meltdown in this year's Derby. I mean, just look at what the first half was, 45 and a piece, and the second one, 53 and a piece. So there was, in fact, a pace meltdown. Just nobody could catch the pace better. And look where Promises Fulfilled finished. And don't make a mistake and think Promises Fulfilled a bad horse because of his two finishes. He was a victim of pace in two straight races. This was a suicidal pace. And Good Magic did very well to be attending the pace as well as he did. Right? I mean, he was kind of, I think his trip, I don't remember exactly, but I would guess it was somewhat similar to Oxbow's trip in where his proximity to the pace was, and he finished well back in that Derby. Just the closers didn't get there. They either weren't good enough or didn't handle the track, and it probably is some combination of both. But this was a bit of a pace meltdown scenario. It just, yep, nobody was able to take advantage of it, and it's a credit to Justify. And in this case, a horse that may well have lost in other circumstances won and was a very deserving winner instead of a very undeserving loser, and which we often see in pace meltdowns. So, I you know, there's so much focus is being played on, you know, and, you know, Hofberg did have some trouble. He did run well through it, and I do like Hofberg and have no argument with that. And it seems, and I would like to watch it a couple more times again, because I don't think I saw it as much as I should have, that the ridiculously overbet horse with the Jack horse did have some trouble in the race, but these horses were also taking advantage of circumstances that were extraordinarily in their favor. whereas the circumstances were not in the favor of Justify, nor were they in the favor of Good Magic. Yet these horses managed to run 1-2. And Audible, I mean, Javier gets the award that Joel Rosario got last year on Practical Joke. He just gave Audible a sensational ride. He really did everything right on that horse and, you know, almost got second and got third. And it was justice that he wasn't second because he wasn't the second best horse. And I think Distilled Regard ran well to be fourth. He had a little bit of trouble at some times, but once again, he was a horse that handled the track. So there have to be horses there that didn't handle the track. You know what I mean? Because some of those horses had to show up, whoever they were, whether they were Vino Rosso or somebody, because there were some horses that had the talent to close and make a factor. And the fact that Instilled Regard appeared to have run as well as he did, despite the fact that he's shown sort of mediocre talent. Well, not, he's not a bad horse, but he's, you know, relative to the field. He shouldn't have been the longest shot on the board because he wasn't the least likely winner because of his running style. At least there were some ridiculous horses in that race. Frisian Fire had no chance. And he actually ran that badly, finishing 10th or 11th, which also probably shows how many horses didn't handle the track. Anyway, that's where I am on the Derby.
Well, no, I think it's important what you said at the top of this and why the video, why people will benefit the same way they benefited, you know, for the long time that Trips and Traps, you know, showed people how to watch races and understand pace factors and positioning and horses.
Yeah, this
that
is one where people will get themselves in trouble getting overly enamored with horses that were gaining ground late in this Derby. And I really think the credit deserved in this race goes to the first two finishers. And I don't think it's that close. It doesn't mean, you know, maybe both of them also really like the track, but I don't think so. It's not like Justify ran his big figure. I think Justify on the track fine. I mean, it's a little easier to handle it when you're skipping out front and there's no Derby kicking your face. But once again, it didn't help Palace Malice, did it? 5 years right. ago or whatever that was.
Right.
And I think people should look at that Derby and look at that pace and say to themselves, you know, geez, we all talk about, you know, we saw what Palace Malice did. And Justify's a good horse. It's a really good horse. And I also don't think that we need to be in such a big hurry to declare his greatness. I mean, my gosh, he's run four times. What he's accomplished in this short period of time is if not borderline, I'd say borderline remarkable, but maybe it's just remarkable. Regardless, you know, it's incredible what he's done in a few short weeks. But let's let him write his story. There's no big hurry to declare his place in the history of the game.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So we'll look forward, and hopefully there's plenty to come out of this. I mean, the excitement about the Derby, agreed, it's too bad that you get, and Mark Cassie just talked about it, the wet weather, which puts a damper on everything. But I want to remind everybody how excited we were about this group of horses going into Saturday. And
let's not declare them bad because of the race in the slot.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. You know, I mean, come on. Mendelssohn's a good horse. How good he is, I don't know. And I love that. You know, I hope a lot of people read that Racing Post.
It's the greatest.
O'Brien. It just shows this is, you know, I gained such respect for him. Not that I didn't think he was a good trainer beforehand, but you can understand his success because that interview showed him to be incredibly introspective about why they succeed and why, but more importantly, why they fail. And you only succeed by figuring out why you fail. I thought that was just great. And it's just an example of you know, why is this man successful? Yeah, he gets a lot of good horses, but clearly he's somebody that spends a great deal of time figuring out what he's doing wrong and trying to correct it. And that's something everybody should do in life. And not enough people do. And I'm always surprised by the lack of introspection at the racetrack. A place where it's needed more than anywhere, as much as anywhere, I can imagine. You know, there's one person, you know, in this country that could use introspection more than anybody else, but that's another discussion. You know, I got the feeling that he's coming back for dirt races. I would love to hear him preparing for the Travers. I'd love to see him in Saratoga and come to Saratoga and Jim Dandy Travers. Why not? I mean, I'd love to see this horse get a chance to show what he can do because he's better than that. How good he is, we'll see, but he's better than that. And there are other horses in there as well. Vino Rosso's probably a pretty good horse. We'll see. He only ran that one good race in the wood, but why couldn't he go forward from there? I wouldn't write him off. And there are other horses in there. Baldoro's a better horse than that.
Sure.
He chased the pace. I mean, you know, he's an example of a horse that also chased the pace. I didn't like the ride. It may not have mattered. He may not have really handled the track. And he may not have been good enough. But I was surprised that they decided to be in such attack mode with him. I thought this is the race for them to actually sit back.
I agree.
That may be another
reason. I completely agree.
Yeah, I thought it was. I mean, this was the reason I liked him. Now, my opinion may have just been bad, which is fine, but you're supposed to be sitting 8th or 10th with him at this point and sitting back 10 lengths. This was the day you knew they'd be going up front, and he could run his race. Instead, for whatever reason, they decided to compromise him. That was dumb.
Yeah, I agree. The decision to go to Victor Espinoza sort of forced that hand, because that's Espinoza's trip. That's his
style. Well, they went
to
the wrong rider, and they told him to do the wrong thing. You can't just blame Victor. You know, it's a whole combination of factors. And I still believe this is a good horse. He's run too well in too many races to just write him off. I know I'm not allowed to compliment California horses, because that'll blow a hole in the idiots who say them. Some sort of East Coast bias. But, you know, I actually, you know, we know that's a better horse than that. Hopefully he'll get his chance to show it. But I think this, getting down on this, you know, you hear this shit all the time, right? Excuse me. But, you know, the crop is really good and the Derby's run, everybody says, they all suck. It's just not true.
And it's May. It remind everybody that... 12 years
without swearing on your show, and I blew it.
I'm
allowed. It's satellite radio, right?
Absolutely allowed. Okay. In some cases, people look forward to it. Satish was on Friday.
Well, actually, the two people that swore on my radio show, one is less surprising than the other one. The first person to do it was Kieran. I said to him,
really?
You were like an upset to be the first person. And then the second person was less surprising, Brian Lynch.
Yes. All right. That one we can see more readily.
Anyway.
That's great. Andy, before we talk about the Sheepshead Bay and the Westchester and what's coming up this weekend, a quick glance at the filly race, because Monomoy Girl basically ran just as courageous a race on Friday as Justified did Saturday.
Well, I mean, she wasn't evolving as fast a pace. But
right.
I wouldn't want to compare that. She's a very good horse. And Wonder Gatto, I've never liked. She actually ran well in there. But Monomoy Girl's a really nice horse. I agree. And I'm glad to hear that Midnight Bisou is coming east. And you know, people shouldn't read it as though they're making some trainer change away from Bill Spar, as much as they just want to have an East Coast present, because this is where all the big races are. So that's what they're taking advantage of. I mean, obviously, I just want to be in a barn of somebody who's going to be in the east. And I'm glad to see her, and looking forward to she renewing, you know, trying to extend the rivalry in the Acorn, because I thought Midnight Bisou was compromised by the start of that race and prevented her from having her best chance. I'm not taking away that Monomoy Girl ran the best race, but Midnight Bisou's been better than that. I'm excited to see them potentially meeting up in the Acorn. That's the plan for both of them at this point.
Yes.
Why not? And love to see that rivalry continue into Saratoga. That could be a pretty exciting summer.
Well, and what I'll add about, there was another overnight trainer move that caught headlines this morning. The Racing Post, Jeremy Noseda has had the Phoenix Thoroughbreds horses taken from him, including Gronkowski. And
oh my God, what's he pointing for now?
He's pointing for you know, training
he's
camp.
Still playing for the Belmont?
I think so, as far as I would know.
Or is he waiting for the Super Bowl?
Well, we will see. And regarding the Midnight Bisou, I think everybody understands the proximity and in terms of execution, but at the same time, Jerry Hollendorfer had no trouble campaigning horses like Blind Luck and
yeah, listen,
so
I'm
forth.
Not, I don't, it's not my place to get in the middle of that. I don't know the story. I don't know the players. I certainly feel for trainers that do a great job developing horses and lose them, and I can understand why that's frustrating, and I feel for them. But I don't know anything about the scenario. It just appeared to me to be a situation of going from one jurisdiction to another, so I understood it, but I, you know, I certainly wouldn't mean to disrespect Bill Spar, who's a terrific trainer, and the time I've seen him with horses, he does seem to do a very good job, but it's not really a place I understand.
Andy, a rundown of the weekend, and it started actually on Friday, where it looks like Paul Pompa's older horse, Hard Study, that was a nice win in the flat out.
Yeah, he liked to go long, and the others couldn't do the distance. And I don't want to, you know, he's okay. He's nice. It seems like he's become a decent horse that seems to have no problem going longer, and he just met a bunch of horses that just couldn't handle the distance. And he may be a little better than them. And he's probably the favorite going to Brooklyn on Belmont Day. But there's another horse waiting in the wings, that Gunther horse that Chad Brown has that won an allowance race. And he was a horse that ran third, I think, in the Peter Pan last year, must have gotten hurt. And he's won two races this year. He won an allowance at Gulfstream and an allowance a couple weeks ago, right in the first Saturday at Belmont. That horse really looks to me like a horse that wants a mile and a half. And he, Hard Study, will probably hook up in the Brooklyn. Name of that horse. Take Your Guns? Could that be him? Could that be his name?
Something the Guns, right?
What was opening Saturday, the 28th? I'll find it right now. Hang on.
All right. And while you do that, I will mention, we'll talk about the Sheepshead Bay result, the Fort Marcy and the Westchester. But this weekend, the Man of War is on a Saturday, as well as the Take Your Guns. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun Saturday, Belmont.
Bogey and the Run Happy.
Five stakes. Weather's supposed to be great. We're doing the Fox Sports Saturday the Races show, actually. This Saturday.
Oh, good. Fun.
Yeah. The cast of characters will be assembled, and then we're starting our daily shows a week from tomorrow. So we'll be starting a week from tomorrow. Wow. We'll be going every day, basically, until October. You know, a couple of days. I think where NBC is covering. But some days NBC's covering where we are on. But I think Belmont Friday and Saturday we're not on. But any other day, even they're doing a show, we'll do a show for at least some period of time. Usually earlier, once or twice later. Yeah, I'll have to start working for a living. Kind of sucks.
We had the Met invoked today. Awesome Slew will head there, talk to Cassie, and Tale of Silence wins the Westchester.
Yeah, I think Mark had to be happy that he made the choice in the sprint. Boy, he looked like he was going to win. He kind of hung in there.
Maybe, yep.
A slightly early move, but he wasn't beating that monster Backyard Heaven in the Alley Sheba.
Exactly.
So, you know, sometimes you watch a race like that, you think, I couldn't have made the wrong decision regardless of where my horse finishes in the other race. Yeah, Tale of Silence in that four horse photo, and that was a funny race. It felt like there was no real pace when that three got scratched the gate, and it turned out the pace setter just stopped, and Tommy Macho and Cloud Computing may have been slightly compromised in chasing him. Not that either one ran badly in a four horse photo, but Barkley got the win. Good weekend for Barkley, actually. Had a nice maiden win. The horse who should have been about 5 or 6 to 1 on Sunday paid 15 to 1, because they just completely ignored it, but yeah, nice to see Tale of Silence do well. He seems to like Belmont. I don't think that effort's going to win the Met Mile, but who's going to be in the Met Mile at this point? You know?
Do we know if Army Mule is?
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, he's out. I mean, you assume that he's planning on heading it, but he's a hard horse to trust is going to ever be in any race, right?
Yes, even Todd chortled when I asked him.
I'm sure. I'm not. I mean, I'm joking, but I think every one of us wants to run. He's obviously a tremendous talent, but I don't think how could any sane person have any confidence that he's going to show up in any race. I think they probably cross their fingers and hope. You know, there isn't a daily update on his whereabouts and how he's doing. But he's clearly got serious issues, but he's also got serious talent. You know, frustrating, great horse, and a frustrating horse, right? You know, he'd love to own a horse with that kind of talent, but nothing. Listen, it's the bane of ownership, right? You know, you get horses and they just continuously get hurt. You know, any of us that are friends with owners in the game, this is the conversation you have, right?
Yep.
More horses on the injured list than are currently running.
Andy, before we go, and this is a big Tuesday because the rare Andy Serling Jay Privman double Jay following you. Very
must
rare.
Be, wow. I'm an easy act to follow. I spoke to Jay last night.
Yes?
Yeah, well, it was nice to catch up with him. Well, sorry, you know, we talk, but, you know, it's when the Derby's coming up, all you guys are a little bit busy. You know, it's sort of a tough time. I'm sure it's, I mean, the Triple Crown is busy, but there's no busier time than your time before the Derby, especially those guys. I mean, he produces much stuff. And Jay does, Jay does a great job in covering leading up to the Derby. And anybody that wants to pay attention to what's going on in heading leading up to the Derby starting at the end of the year, there's no better source than Jay. And some other writers, in fact, use Jay's work as their source, often unaccredited. So Jay's really the guy to follow. Are we done?
Pretty
I don't know how Holly Elena ran well in the Puget Bay, by the way. We didn't
yes.
cover that. But she didn't run. And I think that Robert Bruce horse is a nice horse, too, the horse that won the Fort Marcy. But I do think that the other, the Silver Wave horse, the horse from Europe that Marty Schwartz had bought, the finished third, that horse ran well, too. Those are both horses that could win the Manhattan.
Nice. All right. Well, it's nice
so
that
great to catch up
the Belmont season. Nice to get the
season
going.
It's a good
going.
Time of the year. Racing is better. We've been working on Friday, Thursday and Friday's cars. Done a lot of work on them, but I've got a lot of races to finish in there. And it's just it's because the racing's gotten more competitive and really it's just such a good time of the year. Better racing, better weather, beautiful plant, people coming out the track. We had a nice crowd on Saturday, and it's a great time of the year. And this is the beginning of the best part of the year. I mean, I don't mind Aqueduct, but let's be honest, this is a good start. You got Belmont, and then, you know, heading to the Belmont Stakes, and then another month until Saratoga, and then a fun fall at Belmont. If you're going to work in this game, in this situation, you got to appreciate this time of the year. This is a fun time of the year. And it feels like we have a very reasonable chance that Justify will be successful in Maryland, and we'll have a chance for a Triple Crown. And that's just great fun. It really is. And it's nice to have people paying attention to the game.
Agreed.
So hopefully things will go well down there.
Well, we're not gonna no Baltimore for you this year. You haven't gone the last few years.
No Baltimore for me.
All right.
No Baltimore. We'll see you later. Why don't you get
you?
You
got it.
Bye.
I appreciate it.
Andy Serling, everybody, and Pat McKenna was nice enough to make it easy for me to recirculate that Across the Board podcast episode with Andy and David Aragona, and listen to it or watch it or both. You'll enjoy it. And a lot, the Trips and Traps for years, of course, we talked about it with Andy, and he did it with Rich and he did it with Eric Donovan. And it was so helpful to learn how to watch races and understand horses to bet back and horses that were dirtied up in their form and also horses that were beneficiaries. We're the beneficiary of Jay Privman after this. Let's take a break. We'll come right back. And Jay's Derby recap, a little soggy, but Jay back home after the Derby watch run that culminated in Jay's picking. I mean, Jay's running up the score when it comes to picking Derby winners. And we've said that for years. He joins us next. Stuart Pittman is going to stop by because tomorrow at Laurel, yes, racing is moving over to Pimlico, but at Laurel tomorrow, 5 to 7, there's a fundraiser, Wine and Equine. Stuart, of course, is running for Anne Arundel County Executive and wanted to get a visit in from him ahead of tomorrow's event. 5 to 7 at Laurel. And should be a lot of fun. The Maryland THA, the Maryland Horse Breeders, organizing and presenting the opportunity to meet and greet with Stuart Pittman. And, of course, Stuart, the founder of the Retired Racehorse Project, the Thoroughbred Makeover, which has been just an absolute sensation for the industry. Remarkable success. Talked to Jen Reutz, of course, ahead of the Land Rover Kentucky event. So we'll visit with Stuart a little bit too, and we got Jeremy Plonk, and we got who else? We got Brendan Walsh and Ben Colbrick. Got a lot to do. We'll start it with Jay next.
the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by five.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a grade one winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery Flew Home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton 2-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a boss and staring at the stars, it doesn't matter the cost, cause everybody wants to be famous and call the shots, so see you over a bar, it doesn't matter the cost.
We're back at the races, about 20 plus to the top of the hour. Jay Brimman joining us from the Daily Racing Forum, national correspondent, and he completes the very rare Andy Serling, Jay Brimman double on At the Races. Good morning.
It's a tough act to follow.
He said it was an easy act to follow.
As I was saying, it's a tough act to follow.
Yeah. The return from Derby is always, you know, it's a long trip home for everybody, and except for those that live in Louisville. And the absorbing everything that happened. I mean, there's the aftermath and then the quick turnaround, but let's distill a pretty special, even under the trying conditions, a pretty special storyline.
Well, I think we saw a brilliant performance by, you know, a colt who did something that hadn't happened in 136 years in terms of, you know, winning the race literally 76 days after his debut. I mean, think about that. Less than 3 months ago, you didn't even know who this horse was. And in his fourth start, he won the Kentucky Derby, setting a wickedly fast pace with a horse who was alongside him early, finished 15th. He had the horse who chased him home in the Santa Anita Derby, try him on the turn, and he spurned that bid. He had last year's champion, two-year-old, try him an upper stretch, and he held him quite safely at bay. And he still was strong to the wire. Even, you know, Audible never got by him, even after the finish of the race, and he was finishing quite well. It was a really, really terrific performance by Justify.
Did the race unfold, Jay, as expected from your view?
Well, as I said on your show last week, I thought it, I mean, it unfolded exactly as I thought was going to happen, because I said on your show I thought he was going to get a first over trip just outside of Promises Fulfilled. So I'm going to say that the answer to that question is yes.
The pressures involved and the conditions, how much of that do we, I don't want to say discount, but how does it skew the result, or, you know, what transpired in your mind?
I mean, it was, you know, it was obviously a difficult circumstances in that, you know, day-long rain. I want to be a bookmaker for meteorologists, because they're the worst handicappers I've ever seen. I mean, they couldn't have been more wrong about the Friday and then Saturday forecast. It was supposed to rain all day Friday, and it was barely a drop, and then Saturday was supposed to be not as bad, and it was a record-setting level of rain in the Louisville area. So, missed it by that much. But, you know, they all had to run over the same track. And really, I mean, it was a formful race. I mean, the horses who ran 1, 2, 3 all were horses who had trained well, or to their expectations, in the case of Audible, since he's not a horse who impresses you in the morning, as we learned before the Florida Derby, but still runs well in the afternoon, as we learned at the time of the Florida Derby. And that continued leading up to the Kentucky Derby. But both Justify, and especially Good Magic, I mean, followed the coverage that we had on him all week. We were practically screaming, like, look, this horse is going to run his best race of the year. You can just tell by the way he had breezed and the way he subsequently galloped coming into the race. So I thought it was a very formful race from that standpoint. And the horse who won is obviously a very, very good horse to do what he did in such a short amount of time. And he earned it. I mean, he had to, so just outlining the way the race unfolded, it was, the horse that we ran early with, finishing 15th, and then turning back bids from Quality Colts in succession at the 3/8 pole and the quarter pole, like he did with Good Magic, and then Bolt Oral and Good Magic, to put it in chronological order, I thought was, it was really a special performance.
Before we talk about what's ahead, and I'd also want to talk about connections and put those historic perspectives out there, talk about the portions of the field down the chart, and you know, those that you think can now go and do things that they might be more meant to do. You know, Firenze Fire, for all the concern, ended up, you know, running an honest race and split the field, Solomini, etc. Any disappointments per se in your mind, and, you know, just some overview about the rest of that chart?
I thought Bolt Oro was a little bit disappointing. I mean, he tried to win the race and he just wasn't good enough. Maybe he needs a shorter distance. Maybe the last couple races of running against Justify just, you know, have taken something out of him. I mean, he ran a much better race in the Santa Anita Derby than he did in the Kentucky Derby. So he was a little disappointing to me in terms of his performance. I thought he'd finish better than where he finished. I didn't think he was going to win the race, but I thought he was a top five kind of candidate. And so I think they're doing the smart thing with him in terms of now giving him a freshening and point for a big three-year-old race, and then give him another shot at a mile and a quarter, but in the Pacific Classic. And I get it as to why they want to run in that race. You know, Mick Ruiz grew up in the San Diego area, east of San Diego at El Cajon. He's based in California. Del Mar is a special track for him, and he wants to support the program there. And so I get the interest in wanting to point for that race, especially when you think that a lot of the, you know, a horse like West Coast, for instance, is going to have an Eastern campaign, because Pacific Classic is for three and up, and so obviously Boldora would be running against older horses in that race. But it doesn't look like a horse like West Coast will be in that race. It looks like he'll have an Eastern campaign this summer and fall. And so when you get past him, then you're looking at trying to beat Accelerate, who loves Del Mar, but might not necessarily be a mile and a quarter horse. So I think that's a smart move with him, with Boldora. But otherwise, I thought, I thought it was overall a very formal race. I was really happy with the approach that we had in both Derby Watch and then Mike Welsh's subsequent workout analysis going into the race. I thought we had a good week in terms of telling people what to expect and who to maybe steer clear of.
No doubt. There's no doubt, and I stressed that already. It came from all angles, and it wasn't just in Derby. The rest of the supporting call casts of the, you know, the undercard races. The listeners, Jay, were so appreciative of Will Call. You know, I asked you for one horse, as I do every year, and you deliver, you know, a terrific price for everybody on Friday's card, and you know this. People did okay, and I know they appreciate it, because I get a lot of response.
Well, no one was more appreciative of Will Call than me, because that was good. That made for a good day.
I love it. On that topic,
that was a good result.
We'll talk about some of the other horses and storylines, including the story you broke yesterday regarding Midnight Bizou. We'll get to that in a minute. Your Baffert / Mike Smith appreciation as they add, you know, to their Hall of Fame credentials and further enhance them.
Well, I thought we'll start with Mike Smith. I thought he did exactly what he was supposed to do on Justify. To me, the whole key to the race with him, or one of the big keys anyway, was getting away from the gate, because the one thing we've never seen Justify have to do is overcome some significant trouble if he doesn't get away well. And to me, the trip that he ended up getting in the Kentucky Derby was the trip that you wanted to get, and it was made possible by an alert beginning that gave him that first over trip just outside of Promises Fulfilled. Because as we saw in Justify's first race, he is really fast. But he's got a high cruising speed, and he can carry that speed as he did on Saturday all the way out to a mile and a quarter. So I thought what Mike Smith did in the race was, you know, exactly what he was paid to do. Get out of the gate and put him in a position to win the race. And he did his job. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. So from that standpoint, it was a terrific ride. And he had a horse under him that made him capable of doing it. The thing that to me, you know, just the bigger than just sort of the win and getting to the, to give you the essence of your question, is Mike Smith, by winning that race, became the second oldest jockey to win the Derby at age 52. The only one older would have been Shoemaker when he won it on Ferdinand in 1986. And one of the reasons that Mike Smith still performs at a high level and is still in demand to ride a Kentucky Derby favorite at age 52, as opposed to guys who are literally half his age, is because of the condition he keeps himself in. He's a fitness fanatic. He's in better shape than most of the people that he rides against. And that's a tribute to his dedication to his craft. He works at it. And, yeah, he rides by appointment now, but he's earned that place because of his success over the years. But he doesn't just sort of show up and ride. He does his homework. But more importantly, he stays physically fit. He is in excellent condition as an athlete. And that's why he can go out there and perform at the level that he does when the money's down. You know, as for Baffert, that was his fifth Derby win, so he's now second all-time behind someone who, you know, we all grew up reading about and appreciating, and that being Ben Jones in the heyday of Calumet Farm. He won the Derby six times. Jimmy Jones His son has two Derby wins, but Ben Jones, with six Derby wins, has the most, and Baffert now has five. And if Cavaneer doesn't get beat a nose by Grindstone in the first time Baffert ran a horse in the Derby, then you're looking at justified equaling him with Ben Jones. I mean, we're looking at you'll look back at this era 20 years from now this is a remarkable run of success in the Derby and Triple Crown races itself. When you think that he's won five Derbies in the last, 22 runnings from 97 till now, that's a heck of a strike rate. And I would dare say, I mean, obviously, you had to have the goods with Justify, because it takes an incredible equine athlete to run three races in 48 days, as he did to begin his career, and in that third start win the Santa Anita Derby, beating a high-quality horse in Bolt d'Oro, and then come back 4 weeks later and beat 19 other horses, setting a wickedly fast pace and running all the way to the wire like he did to win the Kentucky Derby. So four starts in 76 days, that's an incredible equine athlete to do that. But I really think that there is no other trainer in this sport who would have had the foresight and the audacity to take a horse who was running in a maiden race on February 18 and that morning say that he had big plans for the horse, and already have a plan, if the horse ran as well as he thought he was going to that day, to get him to the Kentucky Derby and ultimately win it. I mean, that's an incredible training achievement, by my way of looking at it.
There's no doubt. Jay, a couple of postscripts to Saturday and then Sunday. And then we all scattered to the winds. The colt remains at Churchill with Jimmy Barnes, and Eduardo Luna is his groom to the stars. And the concern over a video and an uproar that you addressed yesterday, and I circulated that as we were getting off the air. Any further thoughts regarding this, and do we know any more than we did yesterday?
Well, I'm off till the weekend, so I'm not going to be reporting on anything past the baton to Marty McGee since he's in Kentucky. But, you know, I was out there Sunday morning when the horse was brought out. I saw everything unfold in front of me, and I can tell you what I saw with my eyes. And that was a horse who walked out from the barn fine, took a first turn with Baffert fine. On the second turn, stepped on gravel, and it stung him because he's got that irritation there. Pointed his toe with his left hind for, you know, a moment because he was stung by it, but then walked back to the barn when Baffert realized this is really not a smart thing to do to have him out here, because the horse was getting a little bit skittish with the cameras as well. And he walked sound back to the barn. And I would want anybody who has hysterically written about or opined on this situation to watch that film like you might watch the Zapruder film, and just watch how he walks back to the barn after the issue that everybody has gotten concerned over. The horse was sound. So to me, the label of saying that he was lame is a really highly charged word, and I think is really irresponsible. He took a bad step. There is no question about that. But he was not a horse who was walked out from the barn lame, nor walked back to the barn lame. He had a reaction to that you're stepping on something that was in an area where he was sensitive. And that's something that I would bet half the horses or more who ran a sloppy track had coming out of the race. It's not and don't forget that when Justify was brought out for this, it was 13 hours after the race. So most horses are probably not going to be feeling 100%
13 hours after running a mile and a quarter on a track like that, or just a mile and a quarter in general. I thought the horse looked fine other than that one bad step. But to me, to characterize him as being lame is erroneous and unfair. So that's my thought on it as what I witnessed on Sunday morning. And I've seen horses like that before in my career. I didn't think it was a big deal, and, you know, others apparently thought otherwise. If it turns out there's more to the story down the line, I'll come on here and give a mea culpa. But to this point, I haven't seen anything that rises to the level of calling for some of the things that I've seen people insanely calling for. But I will say this, there's one bemused thing has come out of this, Steve. Shockingly, PETA has gotten involved in the discussion over how Justify should be viewed and the care that he's being given. And as we know, they're always incredibly accurate and have the utmost integrity, as we saw by their deceitfully edited video of Steve Asmussen. So we always know where they're coming from. But I do think they had their heart in the right place by saying that they thought Justify should have an independent vet exam. You know, that's a thing that I thought was noble of them to call for. And, you know, I think that'll happen. Because, you know why I'm convinced that'll happen? As you know, every horse who runs in a race at every track in North America has an independent vet exam the day that he's going to run. Furthermore, horses who run in Triple Crown races or the Breeders' Cup are under repeated veterinary examinations from a team of vets in several days leading up to those races. So they do get an independent vet exam. So I'm looking forward to the, I'm sure, inevitable and subsequent press release from PETA where they say that they're so glad that racing already conducts best practices of having independent vet exams as they had called for, because they called for something that we already do. So I'm looking forward to their subsequent press release that lauds horse racing for those best practices.
Yeah, we're also still waiting for the press release acknowledging the wonderful outpouring of support and heroic measures involved at San Luis Rey. They were so responsive to that as well.
Yeah, you know what? That happened on my birthday. That incident. That was on December the 7th. So I'm waiting for my birthday card from them too. I'll probably get them both at the same time.
Jay, one last note, and You did also, while I was on the air yesterday, and I saw it come across, you broke the story about Midnight Bizou going to Steve Asmussen, and certainly from a strategic and shipping and you know that standpoint, you can understand to a degree this decision by Jeff Bloom. From a purely emotional and you know, observational, an appreciation perspective, it feels callous. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good prism to look at it, the way you just encapsulated it, Steve. I understand the strategic idea of leaving the horse back there. If she's going to have an Eastern campaign, it cuts down on all the shipping, and certainly Asmussen has been down this road many times before. He's had couple of three-year-old filly champions over the last decade plus, and including Rachel Alexandra. So, I mean, he knows this is a roadmap with which he's well familiar. But, you know, I know what this horse has meant to Bill Spahr, and I've seen what Bill Spahr did to get this filly to this level, which was a terrific piece of training. I mean, she was going into the Kentucky Oaks, she was two noses away from being unbeaten because she got beat in brutal photo finishes in her first two starts to Dream Tree. And then won her next three races, including a real powerful performance in the Santa Anita Oaks. And she ran a respectable race on Saturday in the Kentucky Oaks. She got shuffled back early and was a point at the 3/8 pole where I thought she was going to get nothing, and she courageously ran on to finish third in the biggest race of the year for three-year-old fillies. So, you know, I feel bad for Bill Spahr. I think the way you put it is perfect. You can understand why the horse is being kept back there for an Eastern campaign. You know, I understand what, you know, as I quoted Jeff Bloom is saying, he does have horses already with Asmussen, so it's somebody he's done business with, and if she's going to be on the East Coast, that's part of the, you know, that's part of the deal. But I really feel sorry for Bill Spahr, who I have as much respect for as anybody out here. He's been a terrific horseman for decades now, and it's really unfortunate that he's not going to be training her, at least for, you know, the rest of this year. I don't know what the plan is once they get through the Breeders' Cup. I don't even know if they know what the plan is once they get through the Breeders' Cup, but at least for now, he's not training her, and, you know, you have to feel bad for a guy who has that happen to him. So it's a tough situation, but like I said, I do understand the thought process on why they're doing it. I just feel bad that, you know, somebody I respect like Bill Spahr is the one who is the one who suffers for this decision.
Well put, I agree. And it didn't, you know, being 3-year-old champion filly didn't stop, based on the West Coast, didn't stop Hollendorfer with either Songbird or Blind Luck. FYI, I mean, on this topic. So I just bristle at this. Jay, there's so much that we could dive through and wade through, but take a few days, and we will look ahead to Baltimore, and we'll pick things up. And Marty's going to be with us tomorrow, as it happens. We have to go over the machinations involved in the pick six carryover for Churchill on Thursday.
Oh, God. You need a roadmap for that.
Yes, that will
My
be.
God. We're,
yeah. Yeah, we're doing that tomorrow. They're drawing the card today, actually. So only a 48-hour window to handicap and so forth. But anyway, we'll utilize Marty and his proximity to the Downs, and we'll see you in Baltimore.
I will look forward to that.
Well, and again, well done. How many Derby winners out of the last how many?
Picks? 8 out of the last 12.
8 of 12. That's a pretty handsome 667.
I get bragging rights for a year. I'm back with bragging rights after McCracken a year ago. But at least McCracken came back and won on Derby Day. It was the wrong Derby Day.
Everybody came back and won on Derby Day. Looking at Lee, and it was a festival.
Yeah, except for the Derby winner.
Except for the Derby winner, yes, who ran into a buzzsaw, actually.
I don't know if he ran into a buzzsaw or if he's buzzed, because, I mean, he hasn't won a race since the Kentucky Derby.
No.
We'll see.
Well. We're going to see. We also have got, we've got more of those Derby participants to look forward to, including Irish War Cry, who's going to headline the Pimlico Special next week.
It's going to be very special.
It always is. Jay Pridman, DRF Pridman, everybody. And Jay, have a good few days off, and we'll see you next week.
All right, Steve. Thanks so much.
Jay Pridman, everybody. Terrific recapping the weekend. Let's take a break a little past the top of the hour. We've got an hour to fill out what's already been a full morning. But Stuart Pittman, I absolutely want to hear from Stuart, and he'll give you a little snapshot of his reasons for running for the county executive position at Anne Arundel. And, of course, we're headed to Baltimore on Sunday, and this, of course, these 2 weeks, there already was an editorial on the op-ed yesterday. Close Pimlico, level Pimlico, move the Preakness to Laurel. But a chance for those of you in the area tomorrow night
you can meet and greet with Stuart Pittman at Laurel Park, 5 to 7. We'll talk about the function, but also some of Stuart's motivations. He'll join us next, Hour 3 at the Races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, folks, Eddie Olczyk here. In my career, I've experienced all of North America's biggest sporting events, and none of them are quite as fun as the Preakness Stakes. It's a weekend-long party in Baltimore, complete with the best three-year-olds racing for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And this year, my friends at ExpressBet are giving one lucky customer the chance to join me and Maryland for the big race. What do you have to do to win? Sign up for their $25,000 Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes and start betting the races with ExpressBet. The grand prize winner gets tickets to the race, hotel accommodations, airfare, and more. Plus, ExpressBet is giving you $25,000 to bet on the Preakness. That's right, 25 grand. With ExpressBet picking up the tab, you get to play the Preakness Stakes like a high roller. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more and register today. And I hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by 5.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a grade one winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery Flew Home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton 2-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.